Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Nonprofit organizations are big business. Some do well, others not so much. Many failing not because the ideas are bad, but because they don't have the capital to sustain those great ideas. So where do you get the money to fund your nonprofit? Well, this week, Howard University is hosting a free conference on fundraising for nonprofits. The conference will answer a lot of the questions for those of you considering starting a nonprofit organization or looking to support the one you already have. We have information tonight ahead of this event. My guests are Dr. Anthony Wilbon, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Administration for the Howard University School of Business, Krista Berry Ortega, Senior Manager, Sanford Partnerships, and Lafayette Barnes, President and CEO of Zulu Global Enterprises. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
Let me start off with something really basic. How have nonprofits become big business? Dr. Wilbon.
Well, nonprofit organizations have traditionally been very important part, a segment of the population of this country, and particularly in the D.C. and the DMV area. The nonprofits are, there are a wealth of them in this area, and all of them require some level of understanding about how to raise money and how to gather themselves so that they can identify the donors that can help them reach their mission. One of the things that we're doing with this conference is actually going through the process of teaching nonprofits how you go about convincing donors that your mission is worth investing in. Mm-hmm. So the nonprofit organization typically, and one of the things that we've done is, and you mentioned Sanford, we've teamed with Sanford. Sanford was created by a philanthropist named Denny Sanford. And he, in his process of giving money, identified that there were a ton of nonprofits who did not know how to ask for money. They weren't aware of the process of asking. They were very passionate about their mission. They understood what they wanted to do. But when it came to presenting a proposal or an idea to raise funds, they weren't able to do that. So he thought this Sanford Institute of Philanthropy was something that needed to happen. And that's why he created this program. Mm-hmm. And so we teamed with them to use their process and also reach the D.C. market to share that information with them.
And it's interesting because when you talk about asking for money for someone who is a novice to this process, this isn't like starting a business and going to a bank and getting a loan. Why is that, Lafayette?
One of the things that we are focusing on our conference, and we'll talk about that on June the 19th at Howard University School of Business, is the whole idea of fundraising is all about relationships. And so what we're trying to do, what we will do with Sanford Institute of Philanthropy and Howard University School of Business, is show nonprofits how to align their giving needs, or their asking needs, if you will, with the giving priorities of donors. And all of that is about building trust, learning how to align their programs with the priorities of donors, and then going through a process of cultivating that relationship, knowing how to ask, and if the answer is no, knowing how to continue until they get the yes, and then more importantly, just like any church, how to have stewardship practices so that they can maintain long-term sustainable relationships with donors. And quite frankly, when you look at the philanthropic pie, most of the giving for nonprofits comes from individuals. And so what we're doing in this process is showing nonprofits how to ask for money, how to develop relationships, and how at the end of the day to service their client base, not only in the District of Columbia, but in the DMV, where we have a plethora, if you will, of nonprofit organizations that are providing all kinds of services, from environmental services, youth mentoring services, workforce development services, you name it, we're providing it. And those nonprofits have one common theme. They know that they need to know how to ask and establish that relationship, because at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Help me with this. For those people who are not familiar with the nonprofit space, and this goes back to the question that I had originally asked. If I decide that I want to start a business building stainless steel widgets, okay, and I decide that I need to rent a building and equipment and all of these other kinds of things, I may go to the Small Business Administration, or I may even go to my bank or my credit union. Why can't nonprofits do that, or can they?
Well, nonprofits, if I can add, are really businesses. You know, just because they're on the nonprofit side of the equation doesn't mean that they don't have to have good business principles. They need to have a plan. They need to be able to identify the funds that they need for their budget. They need to have a compelling statement of how their program will address the needs of donors and other granting entities. And so that whole process is similar to what a business would go through when it approaches a bank, in that it has a plan, it has a budget, a realistic budget, and it also has a compelling statement. And at the end of the day, it has measurements so that donors or grant makers or other funding sources know that the money that they're providing to these programs will have the same kind of returns that a business would have. The difference between nonprofits, I believe, and a number of business owners, nonprofits tend to be mission-driven. And so it's not just about the profit, but it's about providing the service that drives their mission for their program.
We are talking about the Howard University Sanford Institute Nonprofit Fundraising Academy. This conference is coming up this week, June 19th. It's from 8:30 until 3 in the afternoon. It is at the Howard University School of Business. It is absolutely free. It is on the second floor of the Howard University School of Business. Hey, guess what? They're going to be serving continental breakfast. So yeah. you're going to get some sustenance so that you can spend the course of the day getting instructions, information about how to fund your nonprofit, whether you are new to the nonprofit space or whether or not you are continuing in that nonprofit space. I have my guest, Krista Berry Ortega. She's a senior manager with Sanford Partnerships. Krista, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to me a little bit about what Sanford Partnerships is and the role that it plays in the nonprofit funding space.
Yes, thank you. The Sanford Institute of Philanthropy is one of three major programs, part of the Sanford programs at National University System. And it's a beautiful story because we were created by a philanthropist that has given a lot to healthcare and education and really cares about the nonprofit space because he's given so much. So we were created to be able to provide professional development opportunities for fundraisers and nonprofits so that they could learn the critical skills of fundraising for their cause.
And as it relates to the money piece, and this was one of the things that I was trying to get to early in this conversation, because a lot of people really do not understand how the funding of nonprofits work in reference when you compare them to businesses. Can you kind of give me the nonprofit funding 101 to that?
I hope so. I can tell you that according to Giving USA, in 2017, Americans donated over $400 billion in charitable contributions to nonprofits. So we are all giving. We're giving our time. We're obviously giving over $400 billion to causes that we really care about, that we've either had a direct experience with, that someone has included us in and shared their story, or frankly, because a fundraiser asked them to give and they felt like it was a compelling ask. So It's really important that we continue to provide the professional development for fundraisers to be successful in asking. But also, I appreciate this opportunity because we want to expand the importance of people giving. And that's the idea of the Sanford Institute of Philanthropy and working with Howard University and the business schools. If we can teach this skill, then maybe we can double the giving, the charitable giving in the U.S. and actually make an even bigger impact in the world.
You said something that struck me. You said something about compelling ask. How mm-hmm. do you define a compelling ask?
Yes. We believe that it really is based in the relationship with the donor, and it starts there and it ends there. And so the ask is definitely about the organization, but more importantly, it's about the relationship that you have with the donor and identifying what their needs and interests are to see if they match yours and your priorities as an organization. And then to, frankly, be really strategic with the team and your volunteers and the community in figuring out what the appropriate ask is. So it's not a one-size-fits-all usually. It's a customized approach, and that's what we teach with Cause Selling.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about funding your nonprofit organization. Where does the money come from? How do you ask? How do you develop relationships so that you can ask? Of course, there is a conference coming up on the 19th. It's totally free. It's here at Howard University. It's at the School of Business. Starts at really 8:30 in the morning. You want to get there early. It lasts all day until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, talking about issues related to philanthropy, fundraising for nonprofits, whether you are new to that space or whether you've been in it for quite some time. I want to talk, Dr. Wilbon, a little bit about relationships, and certainly, Lafayette, you're welcome to join in. There are, people who may have a great idea. You may have someone who wants to open up a shelter for abused women, or someone who perhaps wants to open up an educational facility to help underserved communities learn computer skills. But the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter. They all need funding. How do you develop relationships if you haven't had any kind of background in that thing before?
That's a great question. I mean, relationship building is a long-term process. It's not anything that kind of happens quickly or overnight. You have to consider, again, one of the things that Lafayette mentioned is that you have to have a strategy. There are close to 2 million nonprofit organizations in the country, and all of them are competing for funding. And are also competing in the same kind of environment that corporations are, with an economy unstable, where you have all kinds of issues that restrict people from giving. So you have to develop the relationships with people who are interested in giving to your mission. And that requires, again, going out and seeking donors, demonstrating to them through some kind of conversation. I think one of the things that most people tend to dismiss is that you have to have a sales pitch as a nonprofit. Because that elevator pitch is not going to get you what you need from a donor. You have to develop a relationship. You have to demonstrate to them that your need matches what they want to give to and what is important to them. And then once you develop that relationship, then you can start advocating for yourself, advocating for what you need as an organization, what your mission is to give to society, and try to develop some trust with the donor that you're going to meet their requirements for what they're trying to accomplish with their mission.
So, Lafayette, you're not suggesting to stalk Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg?
Well, it depends, but that probably wouldn't be my first approach. But I will say this. Donor relationships are based on building trust, as Dr. Wilbon had mentioned. And he also mentioned about the number of nonprofits, all of whom need resources. Donors have a big job in that they have to cipher through all of the ask and determine what makes sense for them. A couple of pointers for nonprofits who are either new at this or have been in it for a while. Number one, they have to look at a need that they can address and then make a pitch, if you will, for how their approach to addressing that need is different. It also has to be one that has a realistic budget so that the programs that are being used to address that need make sense to a donor. Donors aren't, whether they're Bill Gates or whoever, they're not going to just give money away just because they're approached by a nonprofit organization who needs support. And then they also have to have measurable outcomes. I mentioned earlier that running a nonprofit in many ways is like running a business. And that business has to have the kind of indicators that will show a donor, whether it's a grant maker or whether it's using crowdfunding skills. And one of the things that, you know, Dr. Wilbon and the folks at Howard are doing, in addition to the great work that Sanford Institute of Philanthropy is providing through its cause-selling methods, we're also looking at showing our nonprofits in the region how to use crowdfunding as a way of generating funds for their programs. And going back to the basics of looking at how to write successful grant proposals, because grant funding is still a big component of funding. So all of those components together put in a narrative, if you will, that can show the donor that this ask is worthwhile because it's measurable, it's realistic, and it addresses a need that is different than what others have proposed in the past, some of which have been good and some not as good.
But to the points that you were making, Krista just said they may have all of this, black letter criteria. But then she said compelling ask.
Yes.
And so it's kind of like these are the steps A through Z that you must do unless you pull at my heartstrings. Is that accurate, Krista?
It is. It really does depend on the relationship and the donor in terms of what that compelling ask is. So in the cause-selling cycle, just as Lafayette and Dr. Wilbon explained, we have this eight-step cycle that walks fundraisers or new executive directors, board members that are volunteers, through each step, just like a business. You start with prospecting and really qualifying to see if the donor is the right donor for you and vice versa. Just because someone drives a fancy car and has a nice house doesn't necessarily mean they're the most philanthropic or they're the right match for your cause. So there's a lot of steps that go into preparing for that presentation and ultimately that, you know, final ask. And some of that is actually making sure that they're going to say yes. I mean, sometimes you ask and you're not sure, but usually at the point of the ask, which we say is stage 7 of 8, you have a pretty good understanding that they're the right donor and that you're making the right, appropriate, compelling ask. It may pull at their heartstrings. It may be good ROI for them. It may have a good community presence. A lot of donors give for different reasons. But you should know by that stage if it's the right ask and if they're going to say yes.
Let me take a really quick break because I want to once again share this with our listeners. To attend this conference, Fundraising for Nonprofits, you have to make sure that you register. The RSVP is tinyurl.com/HUB-fundraising. As always, that information will be on our website on WHUR.com tonight. And I suggest that you definitely, if you want to participate, please do. But you have to register. That information will be on our website after 8:30. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR number 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Your calls are next.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking tonight about fundraising for nonprofits. There is a conference coming up on the 19th, on Wednesday, at Howard University's School of Business. It's from 8:30. It's from 8:30 until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This information will help you learn about the business of nonprofits, particularly in how they are funded. If you have a conference, if you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go to the phone lines. Let's talk to S.L. Young, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
All right, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I founded a educational nonprofit in 2012, and I always had the concept of build it and the money will come. So over the last couple of years, I've won awards for my work in the county and the federal level, but I haven't approached donors for money. So my question is, what is the most effective strategy to approach a potential donor if you don't have an existing relationship?
I think that's such an excellent question. What is the most effective strategy for approaching a donor if you do not have a relationship?
Well, caller, one of the things that I would suggest is that you do your research, you do your background on the donor's giving history. For example, if the donor's range of giving is from $50,000 to $200,000, then you don't want to come in and make an ask for $500,000 because you're out of the range of what his or her giving history is. Secondly, you want to do some research and find out what are the issues that the donor is most concerned about, whether it's environmental problems, and, you know, whether it's dealing with youth mentoring, whether it's education, whether it's health care. You need to kind of match what your program needs are with what the donor's giving history is. And then you need to kind of look at what has been the pattern of giving. What's the cycle? If the donor has just completed his or her giving cycle, you might want to wait until the next cycle comes before you make your ask. So those are some of the points that I would suggest you do as it relates to approaching donors, particularly those who you don't have a history with.
Any thoughts about that, Dr. Wilmore?
No, I absolutely agree with Lafayette. The research is critically important, and there are a lot of centers around the D.C. area and DMV area that you can do that. One of the most well-known is the Foundation Center. They have a lot of information about donors, grant writing opportunities, all kinds of information, and they have a very good website that you can search to get information as well.
Okay. Your thoughts about that also, Krista, because I think that, you know, from your perspective, as we were discussing earlier, sometimes the pitch may supersede the relationship depending on what it is that the person who is managing this wants to do.
Yeah, it's all about the relationship. And prospect research is really important, but sometimes if you're new to it, you're like, oh my gosh, where do I start? The reason that we have a board of directors to have a 501c3 and a nonprofit in this country is because they are built as a resource to you. So I'd also start with your board of directors and look at the people that you know. Look at the circle of influence that already exists around your organization. Look into the people that have benefited from your program if they've grown through the program and have experienced the impact. Look at the volunteers and see within that group where there might be some assets to continue networking and expanding your circle of influence to other donors.
But let me stop you there, because one of the things that I'm hearing, what you just described, board of directors, volunteers, and the complexities of that seem to be the foundation of not a new nonprofit, but a nonprofit that has been in existence. A lot of people, particularly we have spoken to on this program, when they say they have an active nonprofit, and a lot of times it's husband and wife. It is one person. It may be two or three. The board of directors may be a loosely fitting group of friends with an idea. Does that make a difference?
Krista, I don't think so. I think it's a good start. That's exactly where the idea and the passion comes from, and you'll have your own circle of friends and networking group. Sometimes being external at a certain life cycle in a business or in a nonprofit is an important strategy to bring others in. And then a lot of times folks will have events not necessarily to raise a lot of money, but to get more people involved. So if you have five friends and they each invite one friend, your circle of influence can tend to grow. So thinking about what activities and tours of the nonprofit might be something that you want to invite more people to start really building that annual individual giving program.
I would also say that, you know, there are a number of nonprofits that, quite frankly, don't have the infrastructure that we're describing to approach some of these donors. I'm going to give you a very quick story. I had a lady come to me in my former career who called me at work and said that the Lord had came to her in her sleep, told her to quit her full-time job and start her nonprofit. So we asked the basic questions. Does she have a board of directors? Does she have a budget? Does she have a place to operate? All their responses were no. My advice to her, I couldn't come in between what the Lord told her in her dream.
You better not.
You know, but I advised her to look at other nonprofits that are doing similar work that perhaps she can partner with, build her capacity, and then at a later point, as she develops her circle of influence and other infrastructural requirements, then perhaps go out on her own and look for funds.
Yeah, let me add to that as well. I mean, I think regardless of the size of the nonprofit, you have to take seriously what your board of directors is going to look like. As Krista mentioned and as Lafayette mentioned, they are going to be your outreach, your first level of contact to some of the most important people that you may need. So you have to take the time to really sit down and figure out who do I need that's going to get me to open some doors for me. So you have to spend some time understanding that the board of directors has to be somebody, not just your friends or your cousins or your parents, somebody that's going to help you take this this nonprofit and the mission that you're trying to accomplish to another level.
S.L. Young, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. George calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, George. What's on your mind?
Well, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
We have a 13-year-old nonprofit. It's a community development corporation, and we have several programs under it, from seniors to youth to we feed, give away food every Tuesday, every Thursday. The problem is that we can't get it to be self-sufficient, and we don't know how to reach these donors. And I was listening to you. I was like, oh, my God, this sounds like the perfect thing, right? But we don't know how to find these donors. We don't know how to get the grants that we need to make it self-sufficient. We do little fundraising, but that's what they are. They're little fundraising. The most we probably have gotten is like $3,000 or something like that. My question becomes, how do we find these donors? How do we get the right fundraising in place to make this thing self-sufficient?
How do you find donors? He was just saying that he has a business that helps, you know, feed the hungry. But they haven't been able to, other than, you know, $3,000 here or so, they haven't really been able to raise the kind of money that they've wanted. And the thing that he didn't say that I suspect, and tell me if I'm wrong here, George, you're spending so much time trying to make the nonprofit work that you don't have the time to raise funds to make the nonprofit work.
That's a true statement, because we are mission-driven.
Yeah, he said mission-driven. Go right
So, ahead. George, one of the things that Dr. Wilbon mentioned earlier is the need to make sure that you have the right type of board of directors. You want to have a mixture of a director, some who are fundraising experts, some who are focused on the programmatic support that you need. But you also want to do what Krista mentioned earlier, and that is to increase your circle of influence, going out to various events, networking, meeting, going to the Foundation Center and seeing what type of resources are available to support your program. Homelessness is a big priority for a number of donors. So I would, you know, if nothing else, I would Google and ask the question, who are the biggest donors for homelessness in your particular area? And I think you're calling from Maryland. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So, Krista, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I do agree that it's an important issue, and I can only speak for where I am regionally in Southern California, but what we're seeing in that area is that nonprofits are coming together and leveraging their resources to elevate the plan for how to take care of homelessness in the community. elected officials are getting more involved. So there might be different stakeholders than just individual donors. Of course, we want to look at individual donors as well, but you might also find colleagues, as said earlier, with other nonprofits that care about this work as well. Mm-hmm. And then I would also, after being around for 13 years, if you haven't hired a full-time fundraiser, someone that's dedicated to doing fundraising on a daily basis, mm-hmm. I think that that's probably important to start thinking about, again, in your business life cycle of sustainability, because I would jump in there either as a consultant or a fundraiser, and I would data mine all of the small donations that you've gotten and see how I can elevate those. Even if it's $3,000, maybe next year it'll be $5,000. And a professional fundraiser will be able to do that for you.
And let me also add, we're going to be starting a fundraising academy here using, again, the model of Sanford coming up here in the fall. And one of the things that we're going to add to that is the whole layer of crowdfunding. So the option of using crowdfunding resources to use the Internet to broaden your sphere will be something that's critically important as well. One of the entities or the folks that are going to come join us briefly on Wednesday is an organization called Global Giving. And if you can go to their website, you'll see all the kind of information about how they use crowdfunding strategies to help nonprofits identify funding resources.
George, thank you so much, and good luck to you. The other thing that I think is important to discuss is the issue of crowdfunding, which is a relatively new thing when it comes to funding businesses, nonprofits, ideas. Talk to me a little bit about that. And Krista, is your organization competing against crowdfunders, or do you have a component of that?
No, we're not. I actually feel like we're in this unique position with partnering with Howard, too, that we're not competing with anyone. We're providing this platform and opportunity for education in all of these areas. So we welcome partnerships with anyone that has a crowdfunding platform that can help organizations, you know, take their fundraising to the next level. I did work for a small, family-run foundation for a while, and I remember walking in as the executive director, and they were like, okay, do that thing, go viral, you know, like, have us go viral and raise millions of dollars. And I'm like, yes, that, like, Ice Bucket Challenge was so freaking cool, but I can tell you that a bunch of professional fundraisers and a lot of leaders and a lot of volunteers put a lot of work into that successful campaign. So it's an important strategy, crowdfunding, to integrate into your annual giving program. But what we like to teach, and that's what will happen in the Fundraising Academy at Howard University, is when to know when to integrate the crowdfunding into your annual giving strategy. Maybe it's at the end of the year and everyone's feeling very generous, and so they're in lieu of gifts for the holidays, please give to my favorite nonprofit. Maybe you use it for your birthday. But you really have to cultivate who's going to be doing that fundraising for you, and that comes from the board and volunteers and some of the other strategies we talked about earlier.
Before I have you talk a little bit more about crowdfunding, I want to take a quick break, but when we come back, I do want to hear about that. Also, something that Krista just mentioned when she was talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge, I think that social media, the proliferation of youthful energy in this space has kind of broken the mold when it has come to dealing with nonprofits and pulling again at the heartstrings and getting the attention of those who have the money to take these things to the next level. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about getting money to fund your nonprofit. This ahead of an event, a conference, free to the public here on Howard University's campus at the School of Business on Wednesday, June 19th. And as I said, the information to register for this event will be posted on our website on whur.com. Tonight after 8:30 or so. Before the break, we were talking about not only crowdfunding, but the, I guess you could say, a new generation of
of youthful ideas that have broken the mold for, you know, for nonprofits. One could probably argue that 20 years ago, this process was kind of like, you know, very black and white, like trying to get a job at IBM or Xerox. Now, is it anything goes as a business model?
I don't think so. I mean, you've heard all kinds of anecdotal stories about somebody throwing up something on the web and you're making $1 million, but that's a very rare case. You know, the GoFundMe type of processes where people just throw up a GoFundMe page and make thousands of dollars. That's not the approach I think I would advocate, and I don't think Lafayette or Crystal would as well. And global giving doesn't as well. You have to develop a strategy that you're going to use the crowdfunding as another lever, just like all the other ones, to raise funds, whether it's grant writing, asking for donors. This is just another pillar in your strategy. And you have to have a strategy. If you have a haphazard approach, you're not going to get where you're going.
If I can just add one other a point to that, and whether it's 20 years ago when I was using my typewriter and had no idea what crowdfunding or a computer was, or whether it's something like crowdfunding where you have a number of small donors supporting a project, or whether it's using cause selling, which Stanford Institute of Philanthropy has a great model. And
what is that?
Krista, I'm going to let you answer that since you're with Stanford, but let me just make my point that whether you're doing more traditional grant writing, you have to have a compelling statement, a compelling ask, because donors, grant makers, crowd funders, if you want them to give once and then come back again for recurring gifts or grants, you have to have a compelling statement which gets their attention. And again, on the back end, you really have to have the infrastructure in place so that the measurements that the donor or the grant maker will ask for and giving you support are met. So in terms of the cost selling approach, I think Krista is probably better prepared to answer that than I am.
Briefly, what is that, Krista?
Yeah, cost selling is our term, and it's our textbook as well. It's called The Guide to Relationship-Driven Fundraising. That is our method on integrating proven business strategies with this relationship-building principle involved, so that we're taking the best of the business and providing that context to nonprofits so that they can run a really smart relationship-driven business.
When you receive funding requests, Krista, via grants, what are some of the do's and don'ts for grants? Can you, at first blush, look at a funding request? Doesn't matter what it is, but is there a language? Is there a technique? Because I understand grant writing is a big business in and of itself.
That's true. And I think Dr. Wilbon and Lafayette both gave the Foundation Center a shout out. They've been really providing resources and professional development in this space, and we're excited actually to be partnering with them this year to bring both of our, you know, curriculum and value together as we roll that partnership out. So I know the DMV area will learn more about that over the next few months. I'd like to say that it's a lot different, but at the end of the day, there is a human being that's going to read that application. It might be a room of people that are reading it and deliberating, and it's still a relationship approach. How are you, you know, hooking your reader through writing, but how are you also looking at an integrated strategy to get to know the program officer of the foundation, to have a relationship with a corporation that might want to do a volunteer day and a much more integrated year-long strategy than just getting a one-off grant to fund a specific program? And we're seeing corporations and foundations wanting to be more involved in the organization throughout the year. I think someone said it earlier too, how are you proving that the organization's impact is a good investment? That's the exciting place that the nonprofit sector is moving, is that we get a chance to say that these dollars are actually making a difference in our community. But sometimes it's hard to have the infrastructure to be able to have all that data. And so in a lot of ways, having a relationship with an individual that gives is a little more recession-proof or economy-proof than always depending on someone else's, you know, corporate intentions, if you will.
No, I was just going to jump in and say, and Crystal was absolutely right, that even if you're doing grant writing, it is relationship building. Here in the School of Business or in the university in general, there's a lot of grant writing going on, and as of course this is a nonprofit as well. But we write grants to NIH, to National Science Foundation, to EPA, and nonprofits do the same thing. But just throwing a proposal out there without any relationship with the program manager is not going to get you very far, because most people have probably built a relationship with this person who's going to be rereading these proposals over months. And so they know exactly what they're looking for, just like we talked about in terms of matching the mission. They know exactly what's going to be funded, how it's going to be funded. And if you have that intel, so to speak, that's going to give you an advantage in winning the proposal. So there is a relationship building aspect even to grant writing.
The other part about grant writing, it's a more formal process. Eligibility requirements, deadlines, how many pages, what the font size is, and the sense of, you know, preparing the proposal. But at the end of the day, the fundamentals are still there. What's the ask in the terms of what need are you addressing? How are you going to be different than any other proposal that the grant writer or the grant reviewer will review? Do you have a realistic budget? Do you have measurable outcomes? These are the qualifications and the eligibility factors that grant makers are looking at, and they definitely are looking at it more like a business. So I would say that even though you have a relationship, because of the regulatory requirements, if it's a federal grant or if it's a corporate grant, yes, those relationships are important, but you have to meet the fundamentals, and what the eligibility requirements are important.
I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but one of the things that I think has been consistent in this conversation is you keep talking about establishing relationships over time, but if you need to establish a relationship over time, how can you have a measurable outcome that the person who or entity would want to fund? But if you're new and you don't have a measurable outcome, but you're trying to establish a relationship, help somebody
yeah,
help
I got
me.
You, I got you.
You know, because you. It's, yeah. And because I think that's going to be, you're going to have a lot of people with great ideas,
right,
and they are going to require some help.
A lot of help.
And they could be great people. They may even have the best nonprofit idea since sliced bread assistance, but because they don't have a track record, how do you establish a relationship if you don't have anything to show?
Let me just say this, Harold. That's why I'm so excited. I'm really excited. So let me get my voice up so the pitch is there. that Howard University School of Business and Sanford Institute of Philanthropy are partnering together, because you're absolutely right. It's fundraising is a difficult business. And so in addition to the methodology that Sanford has developed and has been very successful with, what I really like about Howard is that they're also looking at local resources like crowdfunding and traditional grant writing. And so after the conference on the 19th, we're going to begin to focus on, we're already focusing on it now, but the post-conference training plans. And I think we'll help those participants at the conference and those who eventually make it to the training that Howard and Sanford will provide. And even though you say it's free, I don't want people to think that free doesn't mean it's worthwhile, because sometimes people equate free
with not being worthwhile.
So there's, fortunately, through the support of Sanford and Howard, we're able to provide the resources, so we're covering the cost that would normally be charged to the participants at the conference and at the subsequent training that we are extremely excited about.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah. I was going to say, if Krista could give you a hand.
I'd like to add, too, that a lot of times what we see is it doesn't feel fair or equitable. It feels like the ones with the resources, to your point, are the ones that continue to get the resources. And so this opportunity that Howard's providing to be able to come and get this training and this education and this day of networking for free is the right way to start. If you're going to start a business, you're not going to have a great idea and it's going to be successful in the first day, just like a nonprofit or a cause or any other career that you might decide to go into. It takes time, and professional development is an important and empowering way to have all those answers. So we can't answer them all today, but more is coming. There's a book. I wanted to just give a little plug for the book. I think we're giving a free chapter out on Wednesday as well. So some takeaway knowledge. And there will be more education in collaboration with the book at Howard in the future as well.
Well, I want to thank all of you for sharing with our listening audience about this. I think this is a grand opportunity because, and you two gentlemen know certainly that there are a lot of people who have great ideas here. And they are, even though they may realize that this is an opportunity to start a nonprofit business, I would argue that the lion's share of them have their hearts in the right places. And the more information can be imparted to them about this to get their nonprofit up and running and to do important things in the community, big or small, I think is a really, really great step. So I want to remind you again, it's fundraising for nonprofits. It's at the Howard University School of Business. It's Wednesday, June 19th. It starts at 8:30. Registration links will be provided on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 tonight, and I encourage you to do that. Dr. Anthony Wilbon, Krista Berry Ortega, and Lafayette Barnes, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, June 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection.